Good morning, Doctor. First of all, I just want to say it was a great talk and thank you for doing this interview with us. And for the first question, you've conducted extensive research in the field of infectious diseases, particularly in immunocompromised patients. Could you provide an overview of your recent work and how it's contributing to our understanding of infections in this patient population?
Well, thank you very much for this question. I mean, I have been on the field of immunocompromised hosts for long years, and over all these years, I mean, I have observed significant changes in the area. So the main shift was that from prolonged therapy to shorter therapy in those febrile neutropenic cancer patients, and just along with that, the other factor which affects this type of therapy is that risk categorization of febrile neutropenic patients. In old days, all febrile neutropenic cancer patients were considered a single risk category, so we admit them to the hospital, gave them broad antimicrobial therapy, particularly antipseudomonal therapy, and these antibiotics were given during the entire course of febrile neutropenia. However, we know these days that the febrile neutropenic cancer patients are not a single homologous population. There are high-risk group of patients, there are low-risk group of patients, and intermediate-risk group of patients. For example, in those low-risk neutropenic patients, which are solid organ cancer treatment and less intensive patients with less intensive chemotherapy, we usually treat them in the outpatient setting with oral antibiotics. If the patient is stable, can tolerate oral antimicrobial therapy, doesn't have any comorbidity, and this is a very effective therapy. So those patients are not exposed, you know, highly resistant bacteria when they are going to be admitted to the hospital. On the other hand, in high-risk group of patients, we usually admit them to the hospital for the first, 48, 72 hours until they get stabilized, give them broad-spectrum empirical antimicrobial therapy, but we attempt to de-escalate once we have the diagnosis or the patient defervesces immediately and stable, then we can easily switch a narrower spectrum of antibiotic therapy. Or as I was mentioning in my talk, we can overall stop the therapy as well. So these are the changes. And over years, I have done several research, several randomized trials in that respect. And I contributed several guidelines, particularly ESIL guidelines and the ESCMID guidelines on that respect.
Thank you. And your presentation is titled, Let It Go, When to Discontinue Antibiotics in Fibroneutropenia. Could you dive deeper into this topic and explain the key factors and considerations that clinicians should keep in mind when deciding when to discontinue antibiotics in pediatric patients with fibroneutropenia?
Well, probably I have answered some part of this question in the first question, but the basic message is that the shorter the antibiotic therapy, the better avoidance of the complications of the antimicrobial therapy. First of all, I mean, broad-spectrum antibiotics have been shown clearly, particularly in those patients with allogeneic stem cell transplantation, might adversely affect the morbidity and mortality in long term because they cause changes in the microbiome, and these changes may alter the course of the transplantation and may indeed cause a higher mortality. So the accumulating evidence indicate that the broad-spectrum antibiotics should not continue until the recovery from neutropenia. You can stop them early. If your patient is stable, if the patient defervesces early, then you can stop the antibiotics and observe your patients through the entire course of febrile neutropenia. But on the other hand, there is a debate whether these patients should switch to oral fluoroquinolones as prophylaxis after stopping the therapy. Some centers prefer to continue fluoroquinolone prophylaxis just before the empirical antimicrobial therapy. But these days, there are data emerging saying that quinolone antibiotics may adversely affect mortality. So some centers stop the antibiotics early and do not give any more antibiotics, just observe patients. So I think it depends the local epidemiology, local experience. But the main message is that do not treat these patients with broad-spectrum antibiotics indefinitely.
Thank you. And for the last question, You've been actively involved in the development of Kansas consensus position statements, such as the one of advancing the standardized reporting of infection events in immunocompromised patients. How do you standardize the reporting practices benefits both clinical practice and research in the context of infectious disease in immunocompromised patients?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I have been involved in ISIL guidelines. This is a group of European experts with several countries, more than 30 countries, and several experts from those countries are involved. So ISIL has been producing guidelines since 2005. Those group of scientists convene every other year and then discuss different aspects of immunocompromised host. So I think these guidelines are mainly targeting the practicing physicians, those physicians, well, particularly junior physicians. They need some guidance when they are alone. So these guidance are just to give advice for these physicians, for these physicians as well. Well, on the other hand, of course, these guidelines are not suggesting that you should do this all the time, but it's simple guidance. To giving give some idea, you know, reviewing the literature and trying to provide some rules of standards of treating the patients. But of course, there are going to be some exceptions all the time because there are differences in epidemiology, differences type of patients. But I think they are very useful for the practicing physician. So I'm very happy to be able to contribute these guidelines.
Thank you so much.